coming. Welcome to the commission.
Commissioner Fairclough, is faced with many challenges in our life, and it has simply been that in the past, taking on settlement of Kulanko. This shows your lack of experience, and in our case, expertise in some of the areas that you mentioned, because the commission was set up is that it's a set case, and not to actually implement development projects on that. So those set of skills are resident in other departments of agriculture and certainly economic development. So the Russian Commission is not very important. There could be a residual of 2-3% of the claims which might not be settled by the end of 2008. The Commission has projected to settle 2,585, as already said, at the end of the financial year, that is by March 2009. Challenges towards settling the rural claims are linked to the settling issue in the 2008 State of the Nation Affairs, namely the support program for those who are violent. Ensuring that the necessary support is provided to new lessons for the sustainability of the project requires careful planning and extensive stakeholder involvement, which needs to long approach. And this actually also relates to the cooperative governance issues and issues of concurrent legislative competence. For various tiers of government. And I think the silo program, silo mentality continues to be there for government operations in general. Substitution is not a question. Assisting claimants to structure various evidence for property description, rightful descendants, document oral evidence, as in family, claimant, communities, and land holdings. Some dispute resolution and mediation, land price negotiations with current employees, protracted and costly processes for expropriation and employees, institutional capacity for communities and entities, trust, facilitation of settlement support. In short, we are saying these are all the challenges from research, certain cases, particularly when the land has not been serviced, where there's been consolidation or where. Different rights have been conferred upon different communities and traditional authorities, particularly in terms of the Black Authorities Act and so on and so forth. These both major problems and require expertise in terms of research and information. Sometimes expertise of such a nature, which is not even available in certain institutions outside. The costly protracted negotiation process between communities, and particularly the weak community structures and capacities that are resident within these communities to manage their own affairs. All of this contributes to the problems and challenges that we can, some of which have nothing to do against the total technical problems. So we have to confront these other problems, which have to do with the legacy of Apache and disposition, which, if resolved, I think very much addresses some of these problems. But we also want to know that it will take a lot of education, something different from the Chinese culture of for communities to be able to understand. And that's why I think that's what we want to. We cannot expect a miracle. The legacy of our party community will almost automatically give up to the challenge that comes from using and producing one. So, some extensive education is needed. Some of them must be. The commission is not the only player. This also includes what we call everyday inflation, where we have to observe rules, because in community structures, CTAs, as you see, they are not enforced in CTAs, they are not mechanisms of enforcement. So people natural brain grows much easier possible. We are saying claims where there is to be sent on a vulnerability of claims, then try to settle a non-term condition, and these are very, very complicated. Graduation, as you know, still remains the profession of the schoolboy's club.
Sorry, Jack, could you can tell the reason for it, please?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Am I moving away from
the
that were referred 7-8 years parents are bought into the land court, say land claims court, some of whom have not been resolved. Claims where there are family community disputes, and these often are of historical nature and are contracted and not easy to find a solution or a resolution to some of these conflicts. Claims where there are conflicts amongst traditional leaders and boundary disputes, such as the case in the Kukuna land, for example, traditionally, historically, there were only three chief traditional authorities, with King Kukuna and his brothers. But after 1948, we have a situation where you have 72 of those chiefs, so that tells you what the issues are. The commission has settled 74,698 claims, benefiting more than 1 million beneficiaries. And I think if my memory serves me right, it's about 2 million. No, 1 million, 1 point something million. And about 2 million assets. Financial compensation to the value of 4.7 billion was committed. Total assets of 1.994 million have been allocated at a cost of 7.1 million. Grants of a total of 2 million are committed towards ensuring that the community of 4,880 rural states where land has been restored have been taken today. This is just a rundown of claims of families and growth. With the highest in KwaZulu-Natal, I think followed by Mpumalanga, and incorporated other challenges and strategies. On principle payments, there are currently about 580 claims that involve unfavorable payments. The strategies to deal with this problem include media campaigns, radio, television, newspapers, ongoing community visits, working with provincial offices and home affairs, so they have the addresses of all citizens in the country. Furthermore, the commission will keep the files open and keep all the steps that have been taken to face the claimant beneficiary. With two of such attempts, the commissioner can then take an informed decision and make a recommendation to the minister to approve the closure of the file. Such cases will be removed from the commission of claiming when actually, it is in the interest of the public that the files be closed, as there are certain forms of continued situation with the files also could pose a threat in terms of potential, potential fraud. In some instances, we are not saying that it happened, so it's very wise that we need to try to close it. Community disputes, including community issues. The commission is currently dealing with about 2.4 claims where there are a number of issues that lead to disputes between communities. Dispute resolution service has been instituted where required. Police and intervention is sought. The commission also engages the Department of Land Affairs where there are major disputes in some communal property associations, institutions, and there are alluded to problems in regard to this. The rules of the game in communal property association, which is really part of our political education community about the constitution, rights and responsibilities and limitations of rights, and that culture, as you know, does not exist within communities for obvious reasons. The commission promotes that the constitutions of legal entities should be very detailed and all the members of the community involved in the negotiations are informed about the issue case. Traditional leaders, authority issues, boundary disputes. Traditional leaders are not always accepting democratic processes in the decision process. Land belongs to the community, removed and not to the traditional leader. And I think it's a contested terrain. Understandably, because in the past, various laws, legislation, regulating matters traditional, have conferred certain powers to traditional authorities over land, administrative power. But with the advent of the new democracy and the new democratic dispensation and the constitution, certain things have changed, and therefore it is understandable that there was such test. This leads to conflict between traditional leaders and members of the community, or between legal entity and traditional authority who does not always accept legal entity as decision-making body. And I think it is also in some instances, obviously, traditional CJs are perceived as usurping what is the perceived as the powers of traditional leaders. At the recent national Indaba, traditional institutional committees working with the regional commissioners towards unblocking some of the challenges. There is mutual agreement in all the traditional authorities in this. Validity of claims and trials, we have alluded to that. The commission is currently dealing with about 500 of such cases. 53 notices of possible expropriation have been served. Some landowners use delay tactics where they are sensitive to acknowledge that their claim is valid. Ongoing liaison is promoted to the landowners also via the agricultural union. But you also know that there are a lot of landowners who do not belong to any agricultural union, and we have to negotiate with each one of them. It is better when we, you know, landowners also belong to an agricultural union, because that serves our cause better. Our cause, we refer to theirs and ours, in that we are able to reach certain agreement. You know, we have tabled quite a certain approach and how, even how in dealing with some of the challenges we are confronting. Effort is made to communicate the outcome of the judgments, like the Bofela judgment. When negotiations fail, the Commission will have no option but to refer the matter to the Land Claims Court. There are currently 105 cases in Land Claims Court over which the Commission has no control, and which will take a long time. Finalized. Some of the, with the Land Claims Court, is that some of the cases that are in court, the court still requires further information and particulars and details with the community, not only cases that provide. So, in some cases, the community, of legal, of lawyers, with, some of these lawyers pull up at some point because. You know, dealing with communities, communities do not have resources and all of that. And the case remains there for a very long time without us even being aware where instances where communities are represented and decided to appoint the lawyer. And there's a problem with the lawyers, and we only become aware at a very late stage when nothing has really been done to address the matter. And there are certain cases where the land cost has requested several particulars, and this has taken over 4 or 5 years, and there's been no response coming from the community, particularly in direct access cases. So it's also delayed the resolution of claims. Forestry conservation and mining claims. These claims involve a number of high-level stakeholders. Memoranda of agreement has been signed with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism starting in morning. We have just negotiated successfully with Anglo-Clark, Anglo-American in terms of claims with the mining assets, and memorandum of agreement will be signed within the next 3 months, hopefully. There are also other entities like BHP, non-name mining operations who we are dealing with. In most cases, challenges arrive when it comes to implementation, which entails the health benefits for the claimants, including core management. This would apply to protected areas or conservation areas, because it is very difficult in some instances to demonstrate the economic viability of some of these alternatives. For example, the Kruger National Park is the only one that's profitable, but then it uses its profits to subsidize the less profitable. So there are those instances where people ask fundamental questions about the economic viability of sustainability of some of these areas, and in instances where these areas are safe, and we have to enter into co-management agreements, or claimants have to enter into co-management agreements. The question has been raised about the benefits, the flow of benefits to communities, and the sustainability of some, and this would also apply to the impact. It is not always clear what model should be best, and this can take a long time to negotiate. We are also saying with forestry claims, there's no prior model to refer to, so we are actually creating models as we go along. And I think this is really exacting on the capacity of the Commission to think about setting claims, also to think about creating models which would belong normally to the domain of economic experts and financial experts and so on and so forth. It is not always clear what the various sub-teams are working on this for all of the categories currently looking at best practice and precedent in terms of settlement and judgment. And we put together a team comprising of commissioners, Mpumalanga, Kaveren, and the Eastern Cape, and Limpopo. This entails identifying budget indicators possessing the more commercial types of state, where cooperative governments have to be driven to material level political intervention. An extra A deals with some of those areas on settlement models, some of these cases. State land for acquisition for the Commission in terms of first political intervention at ministerial level in terms of cooperative governments, where there remains reluctance to release state land by other government departments and institutions. We refer to Western Cape as one such example. And we are saying possibly risks of this of Kijima, of accelerated pace of some of these claims which are complex and in their nature. This could result in fiscal dumping, and I think we have tried this before. In this sense, this is where we have to work with local authorities and municipalities, some of which might not have appropriate financial or properly qualified records for some time, and we know the problem with municipalities. And project consolidate what it was aimed at, improving the capacity of municipalities to do certain things. They are varying degrees of success. Others are not catching up as quickly as possible. So we expect them to do certain things because they've got land-related functions also, but then they do not have appropriate infrastructure, no capacity within them to do these things. So it is quite a huge challenge. Process not judicially correct. The problem of frustrating things is that you might frustrate some processes. You know, we are expecting in terms of the promotion of administrative justice act to be quite thorough in terms of things. Cannot address development issues effectively. Development has always a long-term perspective, so it's not overnight matter. So once you deal with claims of that involve development, have to take a long-term perspective. Possible compromise on quality, I think it is quite evident that the issue is no longer whether we are able to release land, it's whether we are able to use the land for release successively and successfully and productive. Possible loophole for fraud is always an issue. Subsecretary of some processes already alluded to. Managing the risks, we say we have a clear communication of risk management policies and guidelines for all officials, because we see a risk has to do with the availability and the existence of internal control to mitigate against that risk. So it is the officials in terms of section 45 of the CFMA, and the DG also, all accounting officers have responsibility to ensure that such controls exist. for the new understanding and implementation of functions of directions, quality assurance, permission set and flight directions, to ensure that the top quality assurance, monitoring, compliance requirements in terms of all acts, effective and treasury regulations and instructions which are issued from time to time, effective human resource management. That's quite key also, it really got to do with the procurement of appropriate skills, human resource temper to be able to deal with the challenges. Task control mechanisms in place, monitoring performance of implementing agencies, that's very tough. Contract management, capacities within the commission, because we use in certain instances service providers, and varying degree of success and varying capacities. Others, where you use service providers, you also have a challenge of quality control. Excuse me, effective communication, that we actually communicate to all involved, all expandry, including payments, and I think some of the attempts to defraud the state have come mainly, particularly financial compensation, from payments duplicating ID documents to their systems. It is suspected of Home Affairs officials, and others will have their own equipment in producing some of these documents elsewhere, as you know. Effective procurement systems, effective financial management through processes, guidelines, training and monitoring, which is ongoing. Settlement support, the need for settlement support is reiterated by the analysis done on a total of 324 settlement projects with a developmental aspect. Given its prominence in the competition, APEC priorities and ANC resolutions, land and agrarian reform and international priorities, home settlement support has been identified as critical for the success and sustainability of our land reform program. Settlement support, current land use on 47.2% of the project. Agricultural and 8.3 thousand. Other land uses consist of a combination of land use, for example, agriculture and forestry, from 8.95% of the project. The analysis shows that the proposed land use suggested by beneficiaries will diversify from the current land use, and a combination of land use was suggested by most beneficiaries in terms of their livelihood strategy. The recently developed settlement implementation support strategy will be implemented to ensure sustainable land settlement. The approach of the strategy is in sync with the area-based planning and proactive land acquisition strategy, and is based on the premise that land is compensated for the decisions of state, parastatal, private sector. I've alluded to this point because the key challenges facing the country now, and land reform is within that context, given the global and factors, the global context and the continental context actually, within which land reform is taking place. We see that we are faced with a major crisis of energy, of fuel, and of rising food prices, and these have a relationship, direct relationship and direct bearing on land, because fuel is needed for production, energy is needed for production, therefore only exacerbates the question of input cost. The strategy places land and agrarian reform and the agenda of local government, ensuring that all projects are embedded in the IDP. So just to say, between the two departments, agriculture and land affairs, and to some extent water affairs, because land, water, and agriculture are actually triplets, you cannot succeed in agriculture unless you have water and land, and of course, agriculture has skills necessary, technical expertise. So the approach is really to emphasize matters of joint planning, alignment of instruments, alignment of legislative implications, because each department is established as a silo in reality, because it's got its own mandate, own affairs. But it's implementing projects, the department has to transcend its own affairs and be able to look at a broader perspective. This is what we are taking as land affairs and agriculture, which are no longer planned separately, but to align our processes, to align our instruments, our grants and services, and with parastata, because we find that land reform projects do not fail for lack of resources, they fail for lack of better coordination and joint planning. And the balance and expertise. Resource allocation, this is what it looks like over the years, from 2000 to 2005, the growth in our budget. And just to say, in so doing, I need to refer to an extra A, an extra B. What the budget looks like over the years. 2005-06, there was an allocation of about 2.7 billion. What we managed to spend was 1.789 billion. And this really, and I would explain the reason for that. In 2006-2007, we had another allocation of 3 billion, but we managed to spend 2.3 billion, and there was a requirement of 1.1 billion, which was a billion back to the treasury. And 2008, there was an allocation of 3 billion. We managed to spend 3.6 billion. We required to sell 3 billion. And it's not difficult in terms of the reasons, therefore, that in the preceding years we were not able to spend what was allocated, was due in part to the systems and processes within the commission, the fact that the commission has not just delegation to process something, the long winded procedures and other processes, and then one to cut down on the very commission of the power that is the CNC capacity to spend considerably. But there were also other challenges in terms of institutional capacity within the commission, the availability of staffing. Because with so much staffing, we only have capacity to spend so many billions. Otherwise, if you do not have requisite capacity to spend money, you would have the problem of fiscal dumping, where people just put the money to the budget, as is normally the case. In 2007-2008, the Commission received 3.3 billion for the second year of the new operation. Only 250 for the settlement of that for the payment for the money. Here they were able to apply for the this is the implementation set on our expenditure and the of the commission since 1995. Okay, we have spent an amount of actual expenses, actual $10 billion, 10.6 billion thereabouts. The remaining 4.4 billion is in the form of development plan, which we have to spend. Allocated budget. It's a total of 3 billion for this year, 2009, 2010, 1.6 billion, 1.3 billion, 2010, 2011. Projections for the special allocated budget for the year 2010, 2009, the commission received a budget of 2 billion. MTF budget reduces each year to only 1.2 billion in 2017. It is estimated that the commission will require 17.5 billion capital budget to be outstanding in the following. Land acquisition is 10.6 billion, 2.6 billion for development grants at 25% of the share, which is the maximum of the value of the land. Committed budget of 4.8 billion as a result of grants that goes to the institution, but not factored into the MTF. And this is the point we are taking up to discussion, because as we settle more claims, this amount increases because of the more development funding that is required in the settlement of each claim.
Technology failing us here.
No, it's such a level of
this is the picture that has just been painted. In terms of what has happened historically, in the following constitution program, which is entered practically from 1995, it shows you that through line of events, linear transform, and the blue one shows you that in the beginning it was very slow at the assessment of claims, and it rose with your it rose sharply from 1999, and that has to do with the amendment to the assessment of claims that is not moving from the purely legalistic approach to allow the minister to have confidence in terms of assessment for the future. That rose sharply up until this point in 2006, I think around 2005. That's why we're dealing with this complex case, and it has to manage in the form of a structural deficiency. It shows that we are there, but there is some challenge going on. By end of January, this can show that 74,698 claims were of the 79,796 claims, which represents 95% of those. Of those, 13,800 and 12,000 majority of them payment object for financial compensation, and that's 4.7 billion at 31st of January this year. Rural land restoration. 1.99 million hectares at the cost of 7.1 billion, as I mentioned before, grants of a total of 2.4 billion. Total cost of all settlement claims is about 15 billion, as was indicated, but in precise In terms of the MCF allocation spending on that issue, it is expected to be increased from 3.5 billion in 2007-2008, 1.3 billion in 2010-2011. Due to the current land price increases, it is estimated that the settlement of all the remaining claims will require at least 17.3 billion for land acquisition. If now you were to refer to the claim as an example, the Juliet claim alone, which would cost about 2 billion, and there are major claims in the top point of the area, and those are prime farms, huge farms, which would cost us 10 farms. So it could even be more if we do not tackle this issue of land price infrastructure. Thank you very much. I don't know if I should go to the settlement model, which issues it in the form of an extra, what we are doing. That is in the form of an extra aid that has been issued to you, so I would not like to say in detail. Thank you.
Ed, no, you don't have to talk to the relative members. throw questions and comments. I think that this time we've got it without a little bit more basis for conversation around it. On that note, I'll ask you to shift from here. I had arranged for Honorable Abraham to be the first to to ask a question and make his comments, because he's got another appointment to before you take over the floor, let's I'm saying before you speak.
Oh, I see.
Let's be done on the chair.
Good morning.
so politely change it. And it's your turn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have a number of questions and then just some comments. Firstly, considering the fact that the Commission has failed previously to spend the appropriated budget, how is it going to be able to convince the National Treasurer to increase its budget in order to settle all claims by 2011? Secondly, one of the concerns about land restitution and other land reforms is the sustainability of the projects by land beneficiaries. The restitution and settlement planning grants are important to ensure sustainability of restitution projects. How much grant is provided for each claimant, and are these grants enough to or within the inflation range? You have mentioned in your presentation that approximately 4.4 billion was made available in the form of grants on land expenditure of what, about 14, 15 billion. Clearly not sufficient, but we'll hear from you. Does the Commission have the capacity to provide settlement support as indicated in its settlement planning processes? The Commission should also provide statistics of how many of the settled claimants are still on their land and what is happening to those who are struggling to maintain their land. And we need, Chairperson, as a matter of urgency, ASAP, a spreadsheet of all these projects and claims and restituted land. There's no point us seeing the slides here, the number of hectares that have been restituted and the amount of money spent and the 200 and so many thousand households that have benefited and what have you. A benefit, sir, is quantified not by the land that has been allocated, but by whether that land is productive and they are genuinely improving their lives. After all, our credo is a better life for all. Then, Chair, is there a strategy in place to secure the tenure for all farm workers and people living on land restored to restitution claimants, as was proposed in the Commission Strategic Plan Review? And then, Chairperson, there are a couple of issues that I want to bring up. For example, I would like to know, all of us would like to know, that when you finalize a claim, the land has been bought, what mechanisms have you got in place to see to it that the improvements on that particular land do not, as we say in plain language, go to the dogs? I want to give you one example. In the Dordrecht district, there was land restituted which belonged to the Minnick family. And a year after the land was handed over, the property was handed over, a member of the family was in the area and went to visit the place and found that the place was in wreck and ruin. Now, I believe it is one of the model farms in that particular district. And I would like to know, Chair, that in cases like this, what is the quantified cost, if your commission has worked it out, of restoring that property to the state in which it was, all properties, the state in which it was when the commission took it over? In short, do you have a succession plan? That on the one side, the owner against whom the claim has been proved and has been paid out moves out, and the beneficiaries immediately move in. Do we have something like that in place? As I want to venture to predict that the losses incurred as a result of this kind of thing is billions, not millions, but billions. Chairperson, then there has been some stories in the press. I call them stories because they appeared in the press, but I may hurriedly tell you that sometimes we get more information which seems to be reasonably accurate in the press than what we get at briefings like this. And sometimes I wonder whether the object of a briefing like this is merely to carry out the prescription by coming here and putting things across, going back and forgetting about whatever comments were made here, whatever was said here. You know, we'll see them again next year. By that time they will have forgotten. But remember, I've got a comrade there that keeps all his documents intact. He'll tell you what you said here last year. And he'll seek responses to what didn't happen. But Chairperson, one of our problems is that, you know, on this slide we hear these beautiful acronyms and things. Settlement Implementation Support Strategy. Now, you know, if you reduce that acronym to the words, then it means SIS. That would be implemented to ensure sustainable land settlements. Now, please tell us, in the light of your performance up to now, tell us how do you plan to do this? And then, Chair, settlement support. You say here that the need for settlement support is reiterated by the analysis done on a total of 324 settled claims, stroke projects with a developmental aspect. Can you present to this committee a copy of that analysis? Exactly what was investigated and what were the findings, as well as a copy of those 324 projects, where they are situated, and also what their status is. Chairperson, the other issue here is that in the newspapers we hear that there is a question mark against the Limpopo Commissioner. But I understand that the Commissioner is still in employment. We would like to know what the problem is, what was the nature of the complaints against him, and I believe that this thing has been in the air for a long time. It is not fair to the Commissioner and to all involved that these things linger along without any finality. We believe in human rights, and the human rights of all must be respected. Then, Chair, there was a story about a KZN land affairs official. I don't know whether it was a commission official. Unfortunately, I left the newspaper, actually the magazine, in my office, who advised beneficiaries not to work with whites. Now, Chair, this is blatant racism if this official had said that. And if it is your official, we would like to know what action, if any, was taken. Then, Chair, you have mentioned here in the slides about the fact that that you believe in various types of shirts. You believe in rendering an excellent shirt, par excellence. I would like to give you an example. There is a 70-year-old woman, a Mrs. Guta, who had sent to the department... he's younger than 70s. Who had sent to the department a chronology of approximately 105 forms of correspondence. Written telephoning regarding land she owns at Loskop North in the Groblersdal district. It must be falling under your Mpumalanga office. And to date, she has had no joy. But to crown it all, I think the slide read accurate something. I've just misplaced it here now. To crown it all, what has happened is that she gets a document sent to her a couple of days ago. But this document is dated the 24th of April 2007, in which she is informed that there's a land claim on the property. But I want to venture to say that I doubt whether that particular official, if he's a dedicated or she is a dedicated official, has really done his or her homework. Because it lists here a number of properties in that particular area. And I'm made to understand that hers is not one of them. Okay, fine. If there is a claim against her, why then does a document only reach this lady 2 years after the document was prepared? So are we really being efficient? And remember, Chair, remember, here you are talking about a lady only 3 years my senior. But you know, once you are over 50, the deputy commissioner will know, the calling can come any time. Of course, it can come any time in your life. But when you are in an advanced age, you don't want messy things to be left behind. You want finality to issues. And I think it's a crying shame that for so many years, nothing whatsoever is done to finalize this particular issue. If the land has apparently also been offered to the department, there are apparently very old communities in that particular area who have a need for such land, and it should, if you can't help in terms of the restitution side, then in terms of the proactive land acquisition strategy, something should be done when people come and offer land. And then we are quick to say that there are people who don't want to make land available. When land is being made available, we let those people, leave them in limbo for donkey's years. Now, Chairperson, that is totally unacceptable. In conclusion, Chairperson, the Deputy Commissioner says that 17.3 billion will be required for land acquisition alone in order to finalize the remaining claims. Now, if one looks at a particular year, and I haven't got the figure right here in front of me, I think 200 and something claims were settled. You are projecting that in the current financial year, 2008-2009, you will be able to settle 2585. Now, measured against 280 something, I doubt whether you are going to be able to increase that by a whopping 2,000. It's not going to happen. And let us rather create realistic targets. And if you are being chased around by your principals, tell them that with the machinery at your disposal and with the budgetary constraints that you have, you will or you will not be able to do the job. Don't create expectations that you cannot satisfy. I promise you, we'll be back here next year, God willing. Now we will hear that you haven't been able to carry out that. Chairperson, I think this is all from me for now. Oh yes, now you haven't told us what will be required to provide settlement support if you are going to spend 17.3 billion. Land acquisition is the most easiest part. If you've got the money and you come to an agreement with the seller, you buy the land. What is the most difficult part is to see that that land remains sustainable. And I want to venture to tell you, sir, that you will need 17.3 times another 2 just for settlement support. You will need another 35 billion rand merely for settlement support. So let us not kid ourselves with these things. Let us be brutally frank and upfront and tell one another what is going to be needed, what is going to be required. Remember that at the end of the day, this committee is answerable to the people of this country. And it has promised the people of this country that there will be a better life for all. And I'm afraid to say that of our oversight visits, and the current commissioner for Gauteng joined us on that visit in Northwest, we found tales, we've seen stories of people who may, who have virtually become land occupiers. The land is not bringing them any benefit whatsoever. And if that is going to be the kind of scenario that we are going to allow to permeate in our country and in our society, I'm afraid these food security and other issues that we are being confronted with will lead to an unmanageable and an ungovernable situation in our country. We need to see that we act now and that we do the correct things now. And please, Chairperson, let the Commission rather tell us what it can do with the tools that it has at its disposal and not create an illusion that you will be able to do so much when that particular time comes, you'll have other excuses. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the indulgence, Chair.
Yes, indeed, I have indulged. What I would suggest, members, to get hold of contact numbers of the officials who come before us, so that if you have an issue that has been brought to your attention by your constituent or any citizen, you interact directly with the relevant person. So that, for instance, the correspondence that you've been referring to here, relating to the 70-year-old Mrs. Porter, you would, by the time you come here, have gotten some explanations and answers as to what has happened. Or have you done that already and without any joy?
Chair, may I tell you with great disappointment, you don't even get your letters acknowledged. You don't.
Even when you call the commissioner here.
Chair, you can write as many times as you like. You are very, very lucky if your letter is even acknowledged. Now got proof of it.
And the minister?
Sorry to say, Chair, you don't get any responses. I left this issue last month on the 27th of March. I thought I'll give it to the person in the minister's office. 27th of March. Where are we today, Chair? 27th of May is at hand. I haven't even got an acknowledgement, Chair. And I say this openly.
Okay, let me not indulge you any further. Well, you are present to live when you have to live in Japan. Just indicate that.
I don't have a sponsor. What am I to do?
Now
I'm a
strange
people.
No, I think you will be free to live when you...
Thank you for the
telephone. No, no, I mean.
Did you have anything else?
All right, Mr. Barry. And you should know that you are free not to want to outdo us.
Yeah, let me just change my sitting arrangement. Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Chair, yeah, maybe we say thanks to the presentation. Let me start from the issue that you have raised to Comrade Abraham. You know, sometimes it's better to communicate to the commissioner straight, then he will then communicate with the various sort of sub-commissioners. The reason sometimes is that when you do that, you might get a joy, maybe, Comrade Abraham, than to get directly to them on the individual provinces. But my first issue here is on this, which is a little bit worried me, on this annexure. That was the three to us. Now, let me start with annexure A. This annexure A, I don't know whether it was done last night or it was done 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago. But if you read the quality of this annexure, it tells you nothing, absolutely nothing. And sorry to say that even the way it has been formulated is problematic for me. I don't know whether maybe the person that wrote this report, the person has read this report twice or just print the report and just forget about it. But let's go to the forestry issue. If you read those bullet points there, they are telling you nothing, absolutely zero. Even on mining part of it, those first points are telling you absolutely nothing. Before I ask questions, I'll suggest that this report must be redone and be done properly and accordingly so that you understand what this person wrote this report about to me or trying to do. But having said that, let me also ask you a question in terms of that annexed stuff. If you look at forest, plus minus 740 claims. But if you look at that particular report, say, settlement models have to take cognizance of factors such as, you know, even before you deal with the claim itself, you have a condition already. You have a condition already. Then the question for me is that, why when it comes to the forest issue, the condition, but if it's something else, don't have conditions. Why? Secondly, if you look at those bullet points, these are the conditions that are listed there, number one and number two are listed, they're put numbers. Then go to the next page, the last bullet point there. Commercial forest, the land is taken for community who will then lease the land for rotation. Come on. The communities will receive capacity in the first rotation and the forest company will provide their usual benefit. What is their usual benefit? What does that mean? I mean, I'm sitting here, I don't know what the usual benefit is. What is it supposed to mean? Come on, sir. I'll then say, before the judgment is presented or tabled to us, there must be a proof reading of this judgment so that we understand exactly what the person is trying to say. Let me move to the mining. You've got the Minerals Act. I don't understand whether the second big point is talking to that act. But when you are saying all valid claims are restorable, e.g., land back in title, even, come on, even the way it's been written there, land back in title, even where assessments might not be feasible. There's an act which is an operation. We talk to this issue. I don't know whether there's that sort of a synergy, you know, sort of a linkage between what the Restitution Commission is doing and what other legislation which are governing in terms of the mineral rights and other issues are saying in terms of this particular issue. In the second great point, underground mining will not affect restorability. Negotiations will involve, that is another bullet point, except involvement in final option. You know, this, that's why I'm saying, if you read that answer closely, it tells you that the writer of this judgment has got, he has no knowledge of the act that is governing this area in terms of the mining rights and the mining act and all those things. Which I suppose and suggest that this person must go back and read that particular legislation and come back to us with a proper report in terms of this one. I'm not going to ask that, but a lot of things I can ask that on that particular point. Let me come back to the presentation.
Before you proceed, we have to bear in mind that the Deputy Chief Land Claims Commissioner did ask of the committee whether he should present these annexes. And he was informed that it's not necessary. These are summaries, as far as I understand. And when he took them, he would like most likely have explained what all of this means. I think we just have to bear that in mind as we critique the judgment.
Thanks, sir. Since they were tabled, whether they were not presented, but they were tabled, once the judgment is tabled, table for consideration. Even if you don't present it, you will read the judgment that's in table. Even if you don't present it, because it is in table. And it has been referred to the presentation, Annexure A and Annexure B, tabled, whether presented or not, but it has been tabled.
Thank you. Let me move from the table. The next issue is the letter that has been received, I think by the chairperson, they said 14 August. In terms of issues that were asked in the previous presentation by the land affairs. I just want to make a follow-up and check if the progress has been made so far. Let me start from the one in the committee place.
If I'm looking at this quality of communication, which I think to have a thought before you be able to respond, I think we should
have a thought of that
level. I suppose that the commissioner from that province is able to report, because they are commissioners of various provinces. But some of these questions are reflected to the various provinces here.
Okay. So, Gambo Unite. Okay.
Thank you. If I'm going back to that particular one in the committee said, if you look at the way forward, it talks about the matter that the legal representative, the representative committee has made a recommendation or intention that they're going to refer this matter to the Land Claims Court. Just want to check if that has been referred and what is the process so far, the progress so far in terms of that particular issue. The next one, if you look at the Everton one, you'll see that the general comment at the bottom of that annexure. Anyway, I just want to check the progress so far, because if you look at the phase 3 completed, in their good individual claiming based on the latest verification list from operations were held on October 2007 to February 2008. This is needed to inform them in the rotational options and implications on their claims and to get their approval. We just want to check if this has been done, and if they then, after they in consultation, has definitely approved the options that we made available to them. The next one, if I may proceed on that one, is the Maiba allocation mill drift. The last paragraph on that one refers to the commission is now in the process of conducting valuation of the claim the property. I just want to check if the evaluator has been appointed on this issue and whether they have started the evaluation as indicated in this particular letter. As now, I think on the 7th of May from the 14th of April, I suppose that has been done already. Sir, if you allow me, then come back to the main presentation. The main presentation, I want also to quickly go to the issue referred here around the rural claims not settled. The question again here is linked with the bullet point number 3 under that particular page, slide number 9. Claims where there are conflict among traditional leaders and boundary disputes. The question I want to check here is there any consultation, what I saw in the presentation indicated that there was a national endeavor. Then before I ask this question, I want to check if the committee was informed about this national endeavor, at least if the chairperson was invited to attend that national endeavor, because I'm sure it is within the jurisdiction of this committee. That more especially if these endeavors are convened, and at least the committee is informed, whether invited or not, but at least is informed. I want to check if that has been informed and whether maybe the chairperson was invited to attend that endeavor. The other issue here is in relation to claims where there is a reluctance to release state land by other government departments and institutions. I'll regard this as a shock, because there's no way that the government can really resist to release land, because it is this government policy, the aggressive reform. And then I want to check from the commission whether the reluctance from this department, whether they are in a process or position to expropriate the land. Because if they refuse, they must expropriate. Simple. You can't expropriate a private-owned land, and you can't expropriate the government land. Because if the government department is refusing, you must expropriate that land. You have got that right to do that. And I want to know how many of these lands that are owned by these other government departments are refusing to release for that matter. The other issue here, I want to check on synopsis, progress to date. Breakpoint number 2. Financial compensation to the value of 4.7 billion was committed. I just want to check, since it was committed, underlined word committed, how much has it been spent so far? Because this one is referred to the committee. And linking with that question, my problem with the commission is that sometimes you are chasing statistics and figures. Chasing statistics and figures, forgetting that that land needs to be returned to respective people that own the land. But now if you are chasing statistics, after the payment of whatever money has been paid, then those individuals will be out of money in the next few weeks. And then at the end of the day, that land is not restored back to them. The next issue here, if you allow me, is on page, that is your challenges and strategies, slide number 12. Unfaithful claims. Come on. If you talk about 580 claims that involve unfaithful claims, what I intend to do here? And if you can just give us a breakdown in terms of the province, which province that are affected by this 580, which I suppose that they are going to fall within that category where the they are not going to be able to reach your deadline because for this 580 claims that are untreated, you can just please advise us accordingly there. The last issue perhaps will be that with the national endeavor. The memorandum of agreement that is current trend in the conservation and mining claims. Maybe I want to refer to three or four areas. Mpumalanga is one of them. KZN, perhaps it is Eastern Cape. There's a vast forest in those areas. I think we must just get a briefing in terms of air talk. How many forests have been returned back to the people? And how many that are in dispute? And how many that are outstanding? So that we will get the understanding in terms of that one. Which is the reason why I'm raising that issue, as I feel I refer to the Annex A, because that Annex A worries me a little bit in terms of the restoration of those forests back to the respective system. The last issue, Chair, if you allow me, is on the main judgment. Not the slide, this judgment. If you allow me to go to the page that I'm referring to. If you look at page 12, on that main document under this steps and process, step number 5, negotiation. There was a small break point in the last break point under step number 5. Ensuring implementation and full settlement issues are adequately addressed in terms of the relevant agreements with role players and implementation agencies. The reason I'm referring to that particular one is in regard to the CPA. We have been having problems in terms of our CPA. The CPA is absolutely functioning. I just want to check with the commissioner. If are there any plans of revisiting the CPAs, or if not, what are the mechanisms that in place to make sure that the CPAs are properly functioning? In your presentation, you refer to CPA versus the trust, and I'm sure you are well aware of the Mpumalanga situation, the Zitimbombela municipality. Well, I'm told that that stadium was sold to the municipality by one brand, you know. And definitely, at the end of the day, the community that got that land back, there's no way to do, where to go. And there's a dispute, as we're talking now, in terms of that particular area. So I want to check in terms of this whole settlement, whether you are really rescuing the situation in terms of this particular area. Let me end this question and was the question of the commissioner for the properties in art. But if you look at this document, you can see these pictures still here. And I'm not saying it should not be here anyway. But what I want to check in terms of the progress so far, how far is the progress in terms of this particular case there? The last issue, Chairperson, if you allow me, it is the our oversight when we went to Northwest. I think Comrade Abraham raised this issue. We saw some terrible areas there, which I think we left the information with the commissioner responsible there. There was two communities that they were fighting among themselves. We then, if I remember correctly, we left, we said to the commissioner there, within 2 weeks then, that matter should have been resolved. I don't know whether Matthew will receive the report in terms of whether that matter has been resolved or not. If not, we need to know exactly now why it has not been resolved and how far that matter is. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Baba Shani. The next investor question is Mr. Singh.
Thank you very much. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I'm glad that I'll have more time to ask questions and make some comments here in the committee than during the budget debate. And I'm just going to take the cue from the from the other two colleagues. But what also pleases me is that the type of questions that have been asked by the other two colleagues, which cover to a great extent what I would have liked to ask, and you know, the thought goes through one's mind that you know, you don't need an opposition party when you've got such vociferous ruling party members. But you know, we know that land reform land reform is and should not be a political issue. It is a highly emotive issue because it addresses the fears of those people whose lands have been claimed and the aspirations of those to whom land should be restored. And I think the mechanisms that should be put in place must address the fears and the aspirations. I'm not going to ask questions related to KwaZulu-Natal, Chair, but if one looks at the presentation, you'd note that almost 37% of outstanding claims reside in KwaZulu-Natal. And I want to take a cue from what you said earlier on, that possibly there needs to be engagement with particular commissioners and their staff in certain provinces, maybe as a full committee or as a subcommittee of this committee, so we can get a better understanding of what's happening in those particular provinces. But Chair, just to also follow up on colleague Abraham there, 281 claims were dealt with. You're projecting 2585. The cut-off date for claims was 31st December 1998, up to today, and I don't know even tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, and month after tomorrow, there are still claims being gazetted. Gazetted on the basis that the commissioner's office have decided that there probably is a prima facie case for a claim. But claims which still do not pronounce whether there is a valid claim or not. We as a party have been engaged in consultation with the people around the country, and we're continuing this process on land reform. And by and large, meeting farmers, meeting affected communities, I think the general view is that the farmers especially, white or black or whatever color they are, accept that restitution is the way to go, accept that we've got to redress the wrongs of the past. But what is frustrating, extremely frustrating, is the inordinate delays in dealing with the claims. And I mentioned as an example that 31 December 1998 cut off, and we are still seeing claims being gazetted. We see in the documents that 2.5 to 3 year turnaround, and I think that's the best case scenario. We've heard from the acting commissioner that even with the land claims court, there are matters before the court which are as long as 8 years. And on that point, maybe we need Chair to engage with the land claims court itself to find out what their particular challenges are and why does it take them as a court to finalize matters as long as 8 years. But I think, besides the delays exacerbating the situation, the whole problem is one of capacity. What capacity, staffing capacity, and level of staff do all the commissioners have to deal with their problems? If they have staffing capacity, this committee should know. If there is a turnaround in staff, a very quick turnaround in staff, this committee should know. Because the job of this committee should be to assist the commissioners in fulfilling the mandate and achieving the objectives as set out by the president of this country. There's been a lot of uncertainty among staff because of the temporary nature and the date of 2008 as the date where all claims were going to be finalized. So people in commissioners' offices don't know whether they are going to be there after the claims are going to be finalized, or should they find work in other departments, and that's what's happening. People are leaving in their droves. So if that is the case, we should be informed, because then we could assist the committee by asking for additional funding to staff the commissions better. Now, Chair, the Honourable Acting Commissioner said, land reform fails not because of lack of resources. And that's good to hear. And I think it's the first committee in Parliament where we hear resources is not a problem, but because of lack of coordination. Now, surely there can be a meeting of minds here between all the departments. For example, my information is that in a province, the Department of Land Affairs and the Commissioner's Office, they just don't see eye to eye. Now, how can we expect sustainable production on farms if those two officers and senior officials from those offices cannot meet each other? So I think in general terms, Chair, we're not going to get all the answers at the end of this meeting in an hour and a half or two. And all of us are going to be coming with our own particular glasses. Let us engage with particular commissioners, but let the acting commissioner tell us about the capacity of the department to deal with this. I agree with Abraham and Comrade Valley. We don't want here glossy figures and projections. We've had projections in the past. They've not been met. And we don't want to be just taken on a wild goose chase in that regard. I think I'll stop at that chair for now.
That does tend to be frustrating when the person deals with and asking all the questions.
Now, I've got a number of specific questions, but I don't want to ask them
this time. Are you covered? You can hear you want to raise your hand now. You covered now?
No. Thank you, Chair. I first want to ask Mr. Mapella if he isn't sorry already that he's come back. But anyway, we criticize you or the commissioners, sir, it is because we care and we want to see this ended in the most equitable way ever. Something that I'm very glad of is that post settlement is now accepted as very important. I can just hope that you will be doing this in correlation with the Department of Agriculture. Some of my questions have been covered as the one on Mr. McConnell. And then the second one is on Gongola, which is a specific one. And you see, Chair, when people come to politicians like this with these problems, they are already so frustrated that they see that as their only way. This thing is going to, as I am told, already going on for 6 years. They got a notice of expropriation that was withdrawn. I don't know, they think it is withdrawn. There's a new evaluation that should be done. Can we just get what is going on in this case and why the delays? This is one side of the story that I hear. Please give me the other side so that we can tell people what is going on in that occasion. You said that landowners are not prepared to acknowledge the claim is valid. But you know, sir, that the commission takes evidence on face value and then declares a claim valid. So you know that landowners have their right, as other people have the right to claim for land. Landowners have the right to dispute and dispute it after they think, because they think it is not there. So it is not the sort of thing that one can say in this instance. I think that is a wrong way going in this case. Then, also on landowners, I've got a lot of complaints that they aren't told when there is a claim on their land. They must hear it from somebody else, seeing it in the Gazette, and I think the Act itself says that they must be told personally. So can you just mention that too? And then, Mr. Chair, there's one thing that is very disturbing this morning. An official of government saying he takes notice of ANC resolutions passed on the Congress. You know, a governing party, yes, it can have a Congress where they pass resolutions, but they might come to Parliament with either a bill or a policy paper, so that Parliament can decide what is going on. We cannot have officials in this country taking notice of resolutions by a governing or any party. I know about the troubles in the ANC at the moment, and I have very, very, I know what Mr. Mavela is, his problem is, but this isn't, it cannot be done, it cannot be said like this. It is not the right thing. You are passing Parliament, you are passing Parliament by, and that cannot be the right thing to do. Thank you.
I wonder if the officials are immune to what is happening in the country, because everybody takes notice of what he has to say. But Mr. Boss?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, indeed, everybody takes notice. There's Afrikaans saying, being good, it just being good is clear. Which means whose bread I eat, his word I speak. The bread that's eaten by the officials is the bread of the taxpayer, not of the political party. So that's the word they must speak. Chair, yes, I would like to first of all, let me make a comment, but also ask a question about this. I agree with a lot of what our colleague, the Honourable Arab, said. But one thing I could not agree with, and it's referred to again, I think, by colleague Lali also, the sustainability of land that's been returned to claimants. I think it's extremely important, but I cannot see how this very overburdened, by their own admission, commission can be. It can't be in the job description of the commission to act as Department of Agriculture after a claim has been settled. Their job surely is to investigate claims and to see to the return of equitable claims, and not restitution. Surely you haven't got capacity for that. Since apparently, if we have to listen to what the Honourable Adam said, it has found difficulty in even dealing with correspondence. How do you sustain farmers? What's the farmers being settled? It's impossible. But I'd like a comment from the Acting Land Claims Commissioner on this. Then, I want to come to this issue to be raised by my colleague, the Honourable Nell. And to me, it goes beyond just this one issue of actually in an official document referring to a political party's resolutions. You know, it reveals, I think, an attitude. The attitude is revealed not only by that, but also by some other things in this document. On page 8, it says here, dispute with regard to validity of claims and price. It says landowners tend to dispute the validity of claims and or the price, and are not always prepared to negotiate on the win-win negotiation. Now that's an opinion. That's a statement of fact. Because the next thing is the commission is currently dealing with about 500 such cases. And 53 notices of possible expropriation have been served. I would like to know what the meaning of a possible expropriation is. Does it mean that has been served, there will be expropriation? But the important thing here is this thing where it says landowners tend to dispute validity. In other parts of the document, there's reference to fraud and the government departments that are reluctant to release land that's unclaimed. But there's no reference to the tendency of government not to want to work with the commission, or the tendency to undermine the whole principle of restitution, which any sane human being in South Africa fully agrees with. This is an iniquity of the past that everybody that is sane has agreed must be corrected. It would suggest that farmers tend to be insane, that they won't cooperate with this thing. I would like to see that we have a substantiation of this tendency that is referred to from the commission. I want to go further on the whole attitude. We refer to the capacity of the commission quite frequently. The commission hasn't got the people, hasn't got the resources. We need 17.5 billion to complete the restitution process. I'm not aware that the Treasury has been approached or what Treasury's response to this is. But isn't there a problem with attitude? When a person like the Honourable Abraham, who is an MP, cannot get any response whatsoever, according to his testimony, from either of the Commission or from the Minister, what kind of attitude does the Commission have to claimants and to prison landowners who land in claims? If they treat an MP like this, how are those people treated? For instance, let's refer again to the issue of responding in an official document to resolutions taken at the political congress. What response do we have about questions and resolutions and requests made last year and the previous presentation to this committee? This is the oversight committee over this commission. Where in this whole document is there any reference to this committee? There's none, sir. Not a single reference to this committee, to this oversight visit. Not a single reference to that. Do you indeed, in your attitude, does the commission have any respect for the committee? Or do they think, in fact, as Honourable Abraham said, this is a mere exercise that has to be completed? It's a pretense every year. And I think, probably from the responses of various Honourable members today here, it must be very clear to the Commission, this is not the case. And I would really seriously request the Commission to examine themselves, to buy a mirror when they gather together, look in the mirror, and ask themselves some questions, and answer them those questions themselves. And they'll probably find that it's an exceptional case where you have insane people who will not work for an institution if they are approached in a very different manner. For instance, you said that there were no sales of land. You know, to me, the most amazing statement I've heard in my life, I think. If you approach the deeds office, or you approach estate agents, or you approach the farmers weekly or the land object or other agricultural publications who regularly publish land sales, or you approach organized agriculture, whether it's NAFO or Agri South Africa, they will inform you of land sales in any area. There is land sales every single day in this country, sir. You yourself said that you are no evaluated. Therefore, do not make the statement there are no land sales. You know, it's a complete distortion of reality. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pasha. I did not see any other hand. And in terms of here, that Mr. Pasha would be the last. Was your hand up?
What one would like to say is that the question of land is a political question. whether we like it or not. So in no way can we be engaging ourselves in this debate and it without being emotions and so on. It is a political issue. It started in those days with the apartheid when we were no longer getting present. We have been having meetings, you know, discussing, and some of the questions that we are discussing, they keep on coming. They're just ongoing questions. For an example, the questions that were raised by the Honorable Abraham here, he is ever raising these questions. I do not know when are we going to arrive at a solution or a resolution on the questions he's asking. You know, if you listen at him, if something is uttering from the depth of his heart each time with agriculture and with the land officials. So I am appealing that we get a resolution to this and not only listen and brush it off. We get a resolution, we respond to what he says, because it does affect us in one way or the other. And then secondly, Chairperson, I am also saying that because there are a number of questions that we're asking on a daily basis with our meetings, we need to note down these questions. And then when we come to the next meeting, we ensure that these questions are resolved before we could move or make any steps moving forward. There is the question of the untraceable land claims, which partly to that is that there are no boundaries or there are no local maps to assist the officials on the ground in determining the exact boundaries for these claims that are untraceable. One would like to know that how long are we going to say that these claims are not traceable? And then the other thing that worries me is the question of the land claims courts, where the land claims commissioner cannot go about this, simply because of the separation of powers and so on. And one of the colleagues in here raised that something has to be done. I think it's Mr. Singh. I do agree with you. Something has to be done. We cannot say we've got this number of claims that it will take long for them to get resolved because we cannot enter maybe into somebody's hearing, separation of powers and so on. And definitely it would be very good if in the near future we're able to point this land, you know, where the beneficiaries are able to sustain themselves. We'll be able to point at this project where there is progress going on. We're just moving here backwards, forward. I do not see us, you know, taking a stride forward.
Thank you very much. We sometimes really have no words to say about this restitution business. It has been quite a long time that we thought things will be better. What worries me most is because the end of this year, 2008, all the claims have to be settled. And when we look at the outstanding claims, from Eastern Cape to Western Cape. I do not know, maybe I need some explanation, that all these figures that they are outstanding will they make sure that they, by the end of this year, that 4,998 claims which are outstanding, is there any hope that by then these outstanding claims which have been resolved, or what is going to happen, or are we going to ask for another extension to get this outstanding claims to be settled? Not actually talking about the untraceable payment. I really don't understand that if they cannot find the claimants which are untraceable, when they put that their claim, they didn't give their addresses or so. I need some clarification. I'm not too sure what does this really mean. And Chairperson, I would also echo my colleagues by saying, if we do oversight, we leave some issues hanging behind so that the officials would actually continue to finalize or to find out what we left hanging. And up to now, I don't know whether from the northwest where we have been, we managed to get the answers. But when Comrade Glani was asking, I saw Magia shaking her head that she hasn't received anything. And we gave them the deadline of 2. Maybe because they are here, they would explain what the outcome is. I'm sometimes very disappointed, you know, if things don't work the way we expect them to work. I was hoping that was a very big eye-opening, that they themselves, as officers, would start being quite serious about the findings that we saw there. And maybe it's true that this committee is not taken serious. I'm not sure what's going on.
Thank you. Just a reminder of a question that you didn't ask. Yes, Mr. So it's just a small issue here, which I've done just to one record so that we can get the feedback. It's around the uncollectedness issue that we must want to get really a latest update. The second one is hot bomb, let me say. If you recall, when we were in Mark's building, there was a delegation from East London, if I'm correct, Hobum claim. And I'm not sure how far that case is. We also want a latest update in terms of that particular one. I thought I must raise those. And also, Chairperson, maybe in terms of the record, maybe there's an issue that you were dealing with from, I remember the Port St. John, so you remember when we had the People's Parliament, Pizana. Maybe just to be on record, I'm sure even that case that they should be recorded so that we're on record, so that when we look at the later report, we know that we're on record and so that we know exactly what has happened in terms of those cases. Thank you.
Well, I'm also a member of this committee, so I have my own set of questions. But naturally, some of them have been touched upon. Feel like yes, I need to ask for my own clarity. For instance, in the on day 2, where the president quoted stating that we continue to address a number of many witnesses, including the finalization of the land restitution cases, the support program for those who acquire land. Now, if the Commission can just explain to us as to what is their understanding of the support that is required and their understanding of who should be providing this support, whether those that they see as the needing to give the support are providing it, and if they are not, as what reasons would they understand to be behind such failure to give that support? Now, on page 3,
you stated that your intention is to settle at least 2,585 of the outstanding claims in the long period. Now, what informed this decision to make this kind of target of 2,585? What is it that convinces the Commission that they will be able to settle that number of the outstanding claims? On page 8, you make the point that there's a reluctance to release state land by other government departments and institutions. I am aware that that is the case. It was once the land dam of Luhasa, which is used as a training base for the army. I do not know if that was ever settled, but that is an example of refusal by state institutions to cooperate with the restitution process. But my question is, what does the president, who is in charge of all of these people, in charge of this department, say about this in transient department? Because we can't be hearing this every time that departments are failing to cooperate, and yet not hear as what exactly is the official in charge saying about this. And on page 10, where you talk about the commission having settled the 74,698 claims benefiting more than 1 million beneficiaries. Now, what is the socio-economic status of these beneficiaries as the consequence of this settlement? Are they in a better position than they used to be, or where they used to be, or in worse situations than before that? Now the question of traditional leaders, page 14, you make the point there that they tend, that they are not always accepting democratic processes in the restitution process, and that the land belongs to the community, removed and not to the traditional leaders. Now my question is, over then at the end, you say that there's mutual agreement to involve the traditional authorities and teachers. My question is, if the land is land, belongs exclusively to the people and not their traditional leaders as well, what would be the basis for the need to involve traditional leaders when they have no role to play in this matter? Because I'm sure my answer lies in the question I'm raising. But my understanding is that the two are joint owners of their land. And if you separate them, you are likely to find yourself in a situation where you have an intractable problem. I think you did mention on page 15 that the problem lies with in the delay in the settlement of court cases, in some lawyers abandoning their cases because of the complexity of the matter. But still, I'd like you to explain a little bit as to what are the real causes, because this is a specialized court that is supposed to be dealing exclusively with these land game cases. So what is it that is making it difficult for them to finalize these cases so that they are a contributory factor to the delay in the finalization of the restitution? Lastly, on page 18, you do talk about the difficulties in setting up models that would be best when land involved in forestry conservation and mining is involved in claims. So my understanding is that there are three requirements that a land claimant must meet. One of them is they deem that the land must have been taken away from this person on the basis of racially motivated laws and practices, and that there was no adequate compensation or fair compensation, and that the land was taken in 1950 upon the enactment of that law. Now, isn't it that what the commission should be busying itself is determining as to whether these people have met those requirements, and that then what needs to follow is the question of the community or the individual negotiating with whoever is on that land as to what has to be done to make sure that the land continues to be used and protected.
My last question, last thing, my last question, I'm told the tea is getting cold outside, and there are so many questions that have been left. I suggest that we pay for 15 minutes. So my 15 minutes will be over at 17 after 11, my watch. So thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much. Investigate
and that's what has happened in terms of the Bernard processes. We are in the process of investigating the allegations against him, and he has been placed on a suspension. And it was his death of the allegations, and we don't know the outcome of the investigation will be, so we will always be waiting for that. And we don't know what the outcome of the court case is. But also we are very worried that in our personal conduct, both private and public, our behavior shouldn't translate into bringing institutions, government into disrepute in any way whatsoever because of the nature of the job that we are holding as individuals. So I think that's where we are in terms of this process. But the law is there. The law will be applied and due process of the law. And he cannot be disadvantaged in any manner because the law is there to protect him in the event he's been accused falsely. having said that, maybe I should ask my fellow commissioners to address certain issues. As commissioners spoke about, there were issues around the untraceable claimant, and Commissioner Johnson from State Land, government refusing to cooperate in the release of State Land, and Commissioner Romani, there's a thing around secure tenure for farm workers, how do we approach farm worker issues I think other commissioners, there were questions in your province, Commissioner Mangwani, about problems there. And I think was there an issue on expropriation? Not really. Forestry, approach to forestry, Commissioner Mangwani. And the trade province has been asked to respond to the forestry issue. How many claims have been resolved in these provinces and how many are of them? Okay. And the question of traditional authorities, I think, also arose, and I'll ask the acting commissioner that didn't respond to that. And there are specific questions relating to your provinces. One in the work form, and the other one from Halak Connection. So, just quickly to say,
question on capacity as well, which is a general question.
Yeah.
Staff capacity.
Staff capacity, yeah.
You were just citing examples.
Yeah. just to say very briefly, and I'll be focused in the interest of time on all the questions that have been raised. Just to say, I think it is a bit the context of the commission. Maybe we should start with that. That the commission was really only capacitated appropriately. The question of capacity was never really fully resolved because in the beginning, as you know, commission has been set in terms of an act of statute. And the first commissioner being Mr. Joseph Romani. At that time, institutional questions were never addressed. We had this major program and we had this major policy, and the commission at the time should have been established as a separate entity with its own budget so that it is not really subject to the trappings of bureaucracy and all of that, but it depended largely on the ability of the department to provide systems of support and staffing and the budget of the department for quite a very long time, because it's never been a commission, an independent commission on its own, and that has determined to a large extent the very issues of efficiency and its own ability to do things for a very long time. But there were arguments which were never resolved after some money to us would go to the after we go to the Nguyen and the Nguyen, those questions were never resolved. It's only one of those commissions which are not independent. You can look even at your commissions which do not have as a huge a mandate that we have, and gender and other commission, human rights commission, but this commission was actually married to a department over time. And I think despite the issues that were resolved, that were asked over the years, it was never really, they were never really effective, their attendance. So its capacity hinged on the very capacity of a department. The department was also building its own capacity. So it could not address the questions of capacity of a commission when it had its own system problems. So, and that has been the situation for quite some time. And up to this point, I think it has had an adverse effect bearing on the ability of the commission to do its work. In terms of staff, in terms of capacity, in terms of levels of staff, in terms of staffing that you could recruit, in terms of expertise that you could recruit, and all of that. And it was always subject to public service regulations. And in terms of public service regulations, there are categories of people that you employ, because it determines staff ranking, so you can't attract. I mean, the scarce skills thing in this country applies as much to everybody as it does to the commission. So, you can't attract those skills unless you have a different regime, you know, in the employment. So that just tells you what the dilemmas are. The capacity issues have always been there, they'll remain an issue until at the end of the commission. Secondly, I think no proper assessment was made of what it would take institutional and capacity wise from the beginning to actually settle claims in a period of 5 years. Was it a reasonable period? Because the 5 year period was set in terms of the policy. 3 year for settlement, 5 years for settlement. Was that a reasonable period given the number, the quantum, the magnitude of claims? So those questions have never really been answered from the very beginning. It was sort of assumed that, look, given but by 2000 already, commission had only completed about less than 100 claims, by 1999. It's only with the change in the, as we say, the amendment in the Restitution Act, allowing the minister, giving the minister power to certain claims, that we started to see movement. Otherwise, like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, which have taken just 15 years to settle a claim, will still be in the same position. And that tells you the claims that are in court, that's why they have not been resolved 10 years after the fact. So I don't think we need to recognize some of those constraints. Having said that also, it is also important to say why couldn't we go our separate ways? It depended very much on the the view of the minister in question, and there were several ministers from Derek Hanukom to Minister Thomas Kittinger to the current minister. But in the latter life of the commission, it would be inappropriate to think about that as a commission, to say now that the commission is a separate, if you didn't do that in the beginning, because that would have its own implications and it would delay many other things. So, and I think that's part of the history and the legacy we've got to appreciate. The question of the losses, I wouldn't agree that we had incurred losses in terms of the billions. Honorable Hazel raised a question about, but we should actually go back to what the commission was set up for, its core mandate in terms of the act. It was set up primarily to investigate and settle outstanding claims. It was never set up as a development agency. It was set up to investigate them. But because setting up, resolving claims, you don't just resolve them and turn a blind eye to questions of how claimants are going to live on the land. So the commission spread itself thinly with no staff. And these are people who work very hard. I mean, there's anybody in government, they work over weekends, long hours. You find communities only over weekends, which is not a tradition in the public service for people to work over weekends and holidays and whatever. With absolutely, they don't enjoy the same benefits that are enjoyed by everybody in government. So you are talking about staff that's overworked, that can't keep up with the pace, that has very high stress levels just because of the nature of the issues, that has to face conflict from all angles, farmers, communities, government, politicians, everybody. So you really are talking about the kind of people that you normally do not find in elsewhere in government. So those are the challenges. Those are the challenges that you have. But in terms of what we are required to do, we can't be required to become our friend or somebody that in land affairs, the critique against collapsing projects or projects that fail and don't win. It's land affairs that are taking all the blows, but should it be land affairs taking all the blows? No, because people don't see agriculture. Once they see projects fail, they don't see agriculture, they don't see water affairs. Because the expertise in forestry lies in water affairs and forestry. You don't find that expertise in the commission. The expertise in how to grow vegetables and trees and anything and animals lies in agriculture, not in the commission, not in life affairs. So, but when questions are asked, invariably they are directed to the commission, simply because that's where it's a vantage point of departure. It starts with that link. But again, the reason why some of these things will move slow, short, cut the long answer short. If you look at the Fall Harbor irrigation scheme in Northern Cape, you can't settle that claim on that land without considering the serious consequences that would arise from inability to maintain operations in that area, because it's a scheme that would be responsible. Its contribution to the local GDP of that area, even nationally. And you can't just, you know, hand over the scheme without thinking about the question of if we hand it over, in what form, how is it? And those models, I mean, needs, at times they need experts, as I've indicated. In forestry, similarly. In mining, similarly. And the question was about the experts. On that annexure, you need that expertise, which is not necessarily available to the commission. The commission was set up for a specific purpose, for a specific core mandate. So to say farmers or emerging farmers the projects are collapsing, it's not just true as a blanket statement. There are projects that are working well, but the media normally likes things that don't work because it sells negative stories all the time. That's the nature of things in society. And it's good to talk about cattle that are dying elsewhere than to talk about what is working well. And I think there are a number of projects that are working well. We are learning our lessons from those that are working well. And we want to replicate those lessons. But it's unfortunate that normally what works well is not that money. Maybe that's part of our problem as a society. We also are saying that in terms of this, we should look at what happens in commercial agriculture. How many farmers in commercial agriculture have been liquidated by the land bank? How many of them are being liquidated by commercial banks like APSA, which is a major player in agriculture? There are very many. And we are saying with all their expertise, with all their knowledge, with all their resources, their investment on land, why do they still go under? Some of them, we've studied their balance sheets over 3-4 years. They haven't made any profits. They are indebted. They are running very thin. And the margins are very negligible. Some of them have abandoned their lands. They are no longer doing farming. The question is, what are the costs? Because they at least are better advantaged than claimants, and they have experience. So claimants are facing the same, very, very same challenges, particularly in the sense that if you establish businesses on land, you are not going to have sustainable, because the input costs are very high. And most of the time, once there's a claim on land, the infrastructure is not maintained by farmers. By the time we buy that land, much of the grants go to the rehabilitation of infrastructure. And there's no money for production, left for production. And this is the situation, and we could actually do a presentation at some stage to show what happens reality. And there are very complex questions on others, like the destruction of farm infrastructure, because we also are expected to produce, to provide producing functions on farms. And the question is, how are we going to do it? Because once we have settled all the people, we have bought it over, and we've made arrangements for people to stay there, certain things disappear, and certain things, you have, don't have control over some of those things. So these are very, very complex problems, which need more than just a recognition that they exist. So I don't think our farmers are necessarily failing. They haven't started. We've got to put together the support that they need, just like we did with the agricultural credit bureau for the former white farmers, just like we did with government heavy subsidies for the former farmers, white farmers. So once those had been withdrawn, some of the farmers now were exposed to say, be on your own now, do it on your own, and they started getting into trouble. So there's been a distortion. So we are saying even with our farmers, we need to go that route. And we need to actually provide a number of measures and packages to groom these people up. Most of them, even the culture of production is lost to them. They don't see the value of working the land, because it has been associated with humiliation. Because the farmer has daily experience on the farm is that of being a worker, and they cannot be tried. For the others, it's a source of wealth and pride. For them, it's a source of humiliation, hard labor, and all of that. So there's something that needs to change, and it is about the mindset, it's about educating people about the love for the land. So it comes as no surprise that we are having these kinds of problems that we are having. And I don't think that it is criticism that would help. Negative criticism is more giving incentive to people to do things and so on and so forth. So I think the package of measures that are needed to work the land, if you see basic economics 101, they'll tell you that there are factors of production. They have the land, they don't have the skills, they don't have the investment, technology, they don't have the machinery. So the methods of production, particularly in the modern world, and in this modern world, like Europe no longer depends on us for food. They produce, some of them, they have no land. So we need to get to that point where we also change our traditional methods of production because we've got vast land. So, but also there are other challenges like natural factors, global warming, changing climatic conditions, and all of those, which are a challenge to production and agriculture, over and above these other things. The conflicts and so on in communities, those are historical. They're just like other conflicts, you know, that have been there ever since some of us before we were born. They are still ongoing. And those conflicts, the Commission doesn't have a magic wand to resolve conflict. It can only intervene. But if there are historical conflicts, once you introduce assets and money and capital and resources in a situation of conflict, you are even exacerbating the problem. So these are working with these issues on practically on the ground, you'll see what amount of time they take to. So I think that is the context within. I don't think projects are failing. It is that we take a different perspective. We just need to put in place appropriate support measures to ensure that they work, and that we haven't been able to do. So, but agriculture and land have come up with what we call land and agricultural reform program, which would address that. We have a strategy, we are working on it, and it comprises all other departments that have a role to play, and which have not taken as much criticism as we have, including parastatal and the land bank, because the land bank was set up also for that purpose, and it must have its fair share of criticism on these matters. So so I think I should having said that, I should let my colleagues respond to. We can provide a quantification of what was transferred. Actually, as Mr. Honorable Abrams has said, about 4.7 billion still has to be transferred in the form of development costs and also to claim and so. The billions are not lost. They have not just been spent because we need to create that capacity. And it's not about throwing money at the problem. It's about setting a support system in place for these emerging farmers. So I don't think there are billions that have been lost in that sense. If anything, the billions that we have spent have gone into the pockets of landowners rather than gone down the drain. I would ask my other colleagues to address the issues.
Okay, thank you very much, Deputy CLCC. I think the members are all aware, Chairperson, that the Commission does not hold land. The Commission doesn't own land. The Commission doesn't have any land that it can distribute to claimants. The Commission is therefore very, very dependent on other spheres of government, example, municipalities, the Department of Education, DPW, South African National Defence Force, etc., etc., even including parastatals such as Telkom. Now, our problem has actually been that we have in principle agreements with most of our politicians, our MECs. Our premiers have given us all the support in the world. We have in principle agreements, which I should, in the case of the Western Cape, say that they are verbal agreements. We've appealed to the provincial parliament and so on and so forth. So it's not that the support isn't there. Where the problems are in the bureaucratic processes that have to be followed. We know that our country, our state, is a state which has the rule of law, and we cannot remove the people either living there currently on the land or as people were removed previously. We cannot just take land away from the municipalities as was previously. We've got to follow the rule of law. So the municipalities see themselves, or in terms of the law, the municipalities are private owners. And therefore, matters have to go before council. And council is not prepared to take in principle agreements about anything, about a whole range of land. For instance, in the Western Cape, in the Cape Metro, we have 48 parcels of land, which we would very much like to ask the Cape Town City Council to hand over to us. Unfortunately, council would like to look at one piece of land at a time. And so, for instance, yesterday I met with council officials to discuss two pieces of land in Claremont. We now have an agreement that for those two pieces of land we will pay council a nominal fee. Council says they can't give taxpayers' land away to anybody for free. The other spheres of government say to us that they have their own political imperatives. They have to build schools, they have to build hospitals, a wide range of things that they have to do. So they cannot just come and take the land away from, take the land, either original or alternate land, and just hand it over to us. So there's a very slow bureaucratic process that takes place. But the claimants are at us. They are insisting they want their land back. The politicians are saying to us, you're working too slow. When are you going to complete these claims? And so on and so forth. There's enormous pressure on us. We also find that politically, when the councils change, because there's been a political, either by-election or an election, then the agreements don't hold water any longer. So then politicians will come up and say, well, that was another political party who had made that agreement with you. If I could just cite one case in the Western Cape in Paarl, where we have hockey fields, where the politicians have made all the agreements with us that we will hand the land over to the claimants, who are ready with their business plan. Unfortunately, now there's a bureaucratic hold-up. Legal things that have to be signed, things that have to be carried over from the one department to the other department, and it impacts on our work and it impacts on the claimants. So that, in a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen, is what is happening as far as state land is concerned. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Sir Person. Thank you, Deputy CLCC. I will deal with the question of the target. The question of untraceable claimants, I think it was asked in various forms. And as the specific mentioned in Southern and Northwest, as well as what was left in by the members during their oversight in Northwest. I think what we look at now in terms of the 2,585 as the target now. Indeed, we appreciated the complexities as well as the challenges that are involved. But we looked at what was achieved previously in terms of settlement of claims and what capacity was in place. In the past year, we have looked at the issues relating to staff retention. We have also looked at an additional capacity that was additional capacity in terms of new posts that have been created to expand the establishment of the commission, and with all that in mind, we envisaged that we would be able then to deal with a bit more than what we have been able to settle and achieve in the past financial year, and basically that was the basis. Not only that, it is now that the mill is running in terms of the implementation or exercising of the delegations that have been given to commissioners in terms of approving the cycle of claims approval. Clearly, this might still be a challenge, of course, in terms of the actual achievability to the last claim in terms of the 2,585. But with all the changes that have been introduced now in terms of our way of operating and the capacity and the delegations, the powers that have been given to the Commission in terms of settlement, we hope that there will be an improvement, and therefore that anticipation of an increased target. With regards to untraceable claimants, I think the question that has been asked firstly about untraceable claimants, one question was asked relating untraceability of claimants with boundaries. I think a distinction here should be made by way of clarity. That untraceable claimants, we are here referring to claimants who cannot be located, and not necessarily our inability to trace the boundaries. The boundary issue it's a completely different issue, which also has to eat the question of jurisdiction and traditional leadership. But as to the extent that we are talking untraceable, if those claimants that cannot be located, and if that cannot happen, if we can't locate the claims, yes, we do have instances where we have people who have submitted claim forms, and those claims remain on our database, remain on our books, until we have been able to contact those people. And if the claimants cannot be found, there is nothing really we can do to take them off. They will remain as part of our statistics of our outstanding. But the other side of untraceability of claimants, so if some of those claims that have been resolved, that have been settled, that the implementation cannot be given effect of, the awards that have been made cannot be given effect of too, because some members of those family trees, those families that just lived, are either out of the country, or you go to their places. They simply the family members would say they don't know that person, or they don't know where that person is. And we have actually by way of strategy have embarked on a campaign of publicity. Some offices, of course, will be working with regional offices of Home Affairs, as we have indicated in the presentation. And we have also agreed that we will give a specific period to this campaign, looking for claimants and trying to locate them, up to a point where we will then write a report to the minister indicating the efforts that we have made, steps that have been taken to try and locate those claimants, after which we will then recommend to the minister to approve the closure of such files, such that they come off the load of what is outstanding in the books and on the workload of the commission. And if that is what will remain outstanding, of course, that will be clearly of what is actively what the commission is actively involved with on a daily basis. To come to the question of Everton in Gauteng as one of the things. Yes, Honourable Sally, the case the report that was submitted, it's true that the claimants were interviewed. As one would appreciate, that Everton is one of the events with a settlement character in them. And these are some of the claims that would take long to finalize. If the award has been made, the implementation thereof would also require participation by other stakeholders, and in particular the municipalities. Now, in Everton, we have had to deal with the municipality in order to identify what was restorable, what would be available for restoration. In Everton, like in some of the claims such as Alexander, claimants were dispossessed of a chunk of land which was subsequently subdivided. Now we had to identify of those subdivisions what was available, because when they claim, they don't just claim the portions that they were removed on when after subdivision, but they would claim the entire property. So that identification with council on what is available, on what is restorable and what cannot be restored, has been done. And claimants have been interviewed, and finally we are happy at this stage to report that the allocation has happened, and claimants have even signed consent letters or consent forms where there is proof then that they have consented, they have agreed, and they have been consulted with regard to what is coming back to them as a restoration. The Northwest case, I think in the case in point here we are talking about, we are referring to Batlokwa. I think subsequent to the visit, all the questions that were outstanding were actually responded to within 2 weeks of the visit. What still remained outstanding was the dispute between the Batlokwa community, where some member of the chairperson of the CPA occupied the farm. I think that intervention, as recommended by the portfolio committee, has been done. But I must indicate at this point that the reason why a full report has not been filled through on the resolution of that dispute is because the dispute revolved around the occupation of the farm and the review of the CPA, and that process is still ongoing. because there had been a number of disagreements about the process in terms of payment verification. We have had to go once again into the process of verification to ensure that we have an accurate voters' roll. The IEC is on board now. The date that was scheduled for the election was sometime in March, and that did not happen because of the incompleteness of that voters' roll. But the community has agreed to Mr. Litsulonyana, if you would remember, remaining on the farm because he is in any way taking care of the farm, protecting it, so to say, from vandalism. And there is agreement to that extent. And we hope now in May, the 28th of May is scheduled for another election where the CPA will be elected, and agriculture is on board now with the development of a business plan. As you remember, it was very difficult to consult with the community as a unity, also to deal with issues of the business plan. But I can report now that that intervention has been made, and in fact, your intervention has actually caused the community to demand, which is what is now happening, that the commissioner is involved in each and every step and meeting that they are involved, and of course inevitably and unavoidably so, the commissioner becomes a participant, a standing participant, you know, in all the meetings now that the community that involves the Mr. Litsulonyana and other committee members are participating.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Sophie. I'm going to respond to the questions that have been raised, which are relating to specific cases in the Eastern Cape, most of which were raised by the Honorable Mr. Lali. Firstly, I'll start with Kwali, the case. I must say that this claim is in court as we speak, because the commission was taken to court by the KST municipality, whereby they were requesting the court to order the commission to withdraw the gazette notices that were issued. The application was heard and the judgment was issued, which was saying that all the parties must engage into a consultative negotiation process to find a resolution to this claim. A lot of meetings took place between the various parties, and whereby we reached a deadlock in terms of getting a resolution, so much that the claimants now have demanded that the commission must take the matter back to court for adjudication, because we could not agree on how the claim should be settled. Now we are in the process of filing papers to the court, but I must mention as well that at the same time there are the processes that are ongoing consultations whereby the Provincial Executive Committee, more especially the MSC for Economic Affairs, has showed more interest and is now intervening in the matter in terms of trying to get the out-of-court settlement. So, in short, I would say we are in the process of referring the matter to court. Then, on my part, immediately, I can report that the Valua is in the process of being appointed. We have issued our tenders to prospective Valuas, and the tenders were closing last week, and we're in the process of adjudicating and appointing the Valua, who will be starting for the end of May, which will take about a month to complete the evaluation. Then we'll proceed with the other stages. Then on the other case, which I want to assume is not Pondolan case, it is. Yes. The claim was settled sometime last year, and the land was restored to 883 households there. But there was a problem around the people who were using the land, who were the small sugarcane growers, who were not happy and with the way the claim was settled.
Although there were negotiations that took place even before the Clermont Circuit, and they have now approached the court again to say they request the court to set aside the agreement, and they are also working together with the chief of the area, who is very against the land being restored to the community, saying that the land should be there's no one who's got the right from his subject to claim the land under his jurisdiction. So now the matter as it is now, they have referred it to court again to say the agreement that we entered into were not taken into consideration, the sugarcane growers and the chief. Even though we know that these small cane growers, their leases were ending on the 31st of March, which is this year. In legal terms, they have expired, but they still want to be taken into consideration. In fact, the commission has started to negotiate with them in terms of how we're going to pay them out in terms of the root crop and also in terms of the investment that they have put on the land. So now we're waiting for the court to proclaim on the matter. The whole bomb case, this is one of the typical cases that we have in the Eastern Cape, because when you look at it, it seems to be very much historical, because the claimants are also having a component whereby they are saying they are claiming for the coincidence. And we have now engaged the services of a historical researcher who is going to come up with this historical investigation. Because the issue is also around the extent of the land that is being claimed. Because as we finalize the investigation, the claimant will come back and say, and add more other piece of land and say that they are also forming part of the claim. We have now appointed this researcher, and we're hoping to be getting the report by the end of May, which will be able to tell us exactly which are the portions that are being claimed and the effects around the disposition. And we have even had a meeting with the claimants whereby we had a local inspection in terms of trying to get to know exactly what these farms are done again. And as we were there, you could see that the claimants are claiming a big piece of land, and which is really covering most of PE, UTH, and other areas. On Khalifnek, the problem and the challenge here, Chiverson, was around the issue of the farmers who are currently occupying these game farms. And as you may remember, these farmers were promised to be given this farm through the disposal process by the Provincial Land Reform Office. But what happened is that after learning later that there is a claim, we tried to engage them in an attempt to get alternative land for them. Even about 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting with them whereby we were showing them some farms that we have acquired from the KZN through the new demarcation process. And we were saying if they are interested in those farms, we are going to, together with PLRO, they are going to assist us to ensure that they are getting those farms so that the land can now be in a position to be restored back to the claimants. So they said they must give them some time. They want to look at the farms and think about that, and it will come back to us. So we're still waiting. Then there was also another case that was mentioned about torture case by the Honorable Member Adams, which I must say that I don't have much information on it, but we'll investigate the case and we will provide a return response to that effect.
So, Chair, before the next result, when you refer to the court, you must specify which court are you referring to. That's all I was asking you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, sir. The court I'm referring to here is the Land Claims Court, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy CSCC. I will respond on two issues that were raised. One, clarity on what is happening in Luhata, and secondly, on the issue of farm workers and security of claim. With Luhata, a claim was against a huge piece of land of about 84,000 hectares. And the matter was decided in court, Supreme Court of Appeal, whereby the court declared in terms of Section 34 of the Act that the land is not restorable. And what we have done as the Commission, we have settled at least one portion of the claim by the Maramane community, because the Luhata claim was lodged by three communities, the Khoisis, the Khatose, and the Maramane. The Maramane lost about 12,000 hectares of land. We have up to so far restored 11,000 hectares, whereas the other 1,000 hectares we have compensated claimants in terms of financial compensation. And therefore, the Maramane claim is settled. Coming to the Khatose has lost about 58,000 hectares of land. And we are at this point in time, we are negotiating with farm owners around the Gorman and Postmansberg area. However, what has been the challenge for the office has been that there has been a recent mining rush in around Gorman and Postmansberg because of the discovery of manganese. So landowners are no longer willing to sell their properties there. However, we are negotiating with about 7 landowners who are at this point in time willing to sell. Regarding the horses, part of the claimants were removed from land, whereas others were never removed. They are still living in Luhata itself. And so even with that one, we have a challenge because those that are in land are not willing to move out of Luhata. Those that were removed are saying they want financial compensation. So we are working on that. On the next issue, which is farm workers, what do we do with farm workers in terms of their security of tenure? If farm workers are occupiers of land, we negotiate with our claimants to incorporate our farm workers into the list of beneficiaries that are going to benefit out of the restitution claim. If claimants do agree, then they get to be part of those claimants, and then we then ask for grants which are going to help and assist them to move forward. But then if they do not agree to that, what we then do, we then purchase an alternative land for them, those farm workers, in order to secure their tenure in terms of the security of the Tenure Act. But also what we do in terms of the work that they have been doing, if a strategic partner has been appointed to work with the claimants, we then negotiate with that strategic partner to take those farm workers on board in order to be able to have some continuity on their project, but also sustainability of their lives. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting CLCC. I'll respond on the questions, especially on the involvement of traditional leadership in the processing of claims. First of all, I would like to say that there is no problem in case where claims, the traditional leadership has been part of the disposition when you are to finalize the claim, because definitely when we are to make any legal entity, either CPA or trust or any other legal entity to hold the land, the traditional leadership will have to form part of that legal entity. However, it becomes problematic in case the people who lodge the claims are saying that it does not involve the traditional leadership, and a particular traditional leadership is saying no, if the land comes back, it should be it should be held in the name of the traditional leadership. And while that particular traditional leadership is being, you know, challenged that he or she was not part of the disputed communities. However, we have the mechanism that we do try to mediate such situations, and if needs be, refer such matters to court in case we cannot resolve them through mediation. Then I'd like to further say that, or to highlight that, for instance, in Limpopo, we have a very big challenge in this area of traditional leadership, because there's a lot of clans, which, especially in the Skukune areas, which involve traditional leadership, where most of them, plus or minus 118, have been claimed by traditional leadership, specifically indicating that they are claiming for the upgrading of tenure where they are staying. The challenge is where you find there's clash amongst themselves as traditional leadership, because what is being claimed, except that they want tenure to be upgraded, you'll find in one piece of land, it's allocated to a number of traditional leadership. As the acting CRCC has indicated that at one point in time there were very few traditional leadership, but now there are many. And in order to resolve the claims there, it means the issue of traditional leadership, who is the lead traditional leadership, is should be resolved. Of which, when you look at the provisions of the Act, it's not within that ambit to deal with the issue who is the chief and who is not the chief. Therefore, it's one area which we are still thinking which can be the best forum to resolve that matter before we can really process these claims forward. But we are saying that we are trying to involve the House of Traditional Leadership in the province, to involve them in solving some of these things. But we think definitely it will need the whole thing of the NSAPO Commission to be resolved before we can resolve these particular claims. Furthermore, is the issue, the question which has been asked on the issue of trust and CPAs, are they working or not working? There are areas where you find a CPA has been made, has been formed, and you find in that particular CPA, traditional leaderships are part of it, as especially if they are disposed. We have such examples like Makulek, like Mulitela, where you find there's no problem, the CPA is functioning. And in some areas, we find there are areas where trust has been established, and the traditional leadership and the claimants are working together, and there's no problem. But there are areas where you find either it's a CPA, whether it's a trust, where there are problems, claimants are having problems either against the traditional leadership or among themselves as the people within that particular legal entities. We have a number of them, but definitely it needs a lot of assistance as far as capacity building is concerned. One area which I'll further indicate as a way to answer some of the questions is on the issue of resistance by other state departments on releasing state land. Luwata was one of the area which was mentioned, but I would like to mention some of the areas in Limpopo in particular where we had serious problems, where the Matimbo area on the border of South Africa and Mozambique, South Africa and Zimbabwe, where we have been struggling, irrespective we have signed that land returned to the claimants. Till today, it's very difficult to get the South African National Defense Force and the Public Works to release that land for the use of the claimants. If you look at the land also used by the same department, which eventually were forced to take an alternative land where they were not ready to release that particular land. I think it happened even in other areas, which simply means it's the same with the Kruger National Park, where now they are coming with models where the Public Works together with the Kruger the National Park, they are not ready to release that particular land. They are not ready to follow the Makuleke way of settling the claim, of which is quite problematic, which it needs higher intervention for such claims to access that state land as settlement. Therefore, I think I'll stop there for now as a way of responding to some of the questions raised. Thank you.
Yeah, Commissioner Mangonodo, I mean, the honor of the chairperson, because of the minister's question was also, why do we then send that event from the honorable chairperson in Kosovan Islam's question was, why do we say the land only belongs to communities and do chiefs not also have a right to own the land? Is it not their core, co-ownership? We're not talking about co-ownership rather than just ownership by communities exclusively. Then what are chiefs there for? That was the question.
Okay. I think I've tried to respond on this one, that where the claimants have claimed the land without the traditional leadership having been dispossessed, it becomes very critical, because you know the Restitution Act, it comes very, it's right based. You are to return or to give rights back to those who were dispossessed. And hence I indicated that in case there is someone insisting that he or she was part, especially on the side of traditional, was part of the dispossession, that has to be proven beyond doubt, and that has to be mediated, I've indicated. But I've indicated that in the case where it is very clear that both the traditional leadership and their respective subject were part and parcel of the dispossession, we are able to return that particular land. It would really would be problematic if really we want to bring the traditional leadership where he or she was not dispossessed. There won't be any need if really the Restitution Act says you need to give right to those who were dispossessed. I thought maybe I've tried to, I might have perhaps tried to answer it the other way around. Thanks, my chief.
Thanks, chief. Maybe I should start with the easier one and end with the one that sounds a bit more difficult. I think the easier one is the one raised by Honorable Abbas about the LOSCOP. LOSCOP North has got a number of claims. They've got a claim by the Ndebele Nzuzo, and the Ndebele Nzuzo claims have got over 500 landowners in it. So in this state, it's a bit difficult to ascertain as to what could and could not have happened in this important case, because we do not have the specific details of what they have to own. There's another claim also by Makoka, which has been transferred to the Limpopo office, but we're not able to ascertain at this stage as to which portion is owned by Mrs. Waters. If the committee does have the details of Mrs. Waters' portion or her contact details, we could try to contact her to ascertain whereabouts of a particular case, and we can then provide the necessary feedback. On the question of the forestry, Honorable, I might not be able to give you the specific an answer as a flash how many claims exist on forestry across the province, and exactly how many have been resolved, but we can be able to say that yes, we do have claims that have been resolved on forestry. For an example, the Lusa Midwini claim in the Khelsra district in Lofen has been resolved. We have bought them, I think, about 8,000 hectares of plantation. We still have quite a lot more. We have got another 10,000 that is owned by SAP, which we still need to resolve. And we also have got the Khelek in the Nshanzine district, which we have resolved some parts of it, some are still outstanding. So we have some that have been resolved. I think maybe the question we were going was probably the same. Would we have resolved them? What have you done? Did you buy land and trees, or did you buy land? Or what land and trees in those cases? With a view that they should be able to continue to use that as a business as well, from a tenant perspective. There was a question about expropriation, what is meant by a notice of possible expropriation. To cater for the provisions of the Commission of Administrative Justice Act, we introduced a two-stage process in the expropriation process. The first stage being where a landowner is notified that we intend to expropriate you, make representations as to why should the land not be expropriated. So when you get that first notice is called a notice of possible expropriation, which calls upon the landowner to give reasons why that land should not be expropriated. So that's what is meant by a notice of possible expropriation. And depending on what happens when the representations are made, another submission is made to the minister for a decision whether to go ahead with expropriation or take whatever steps that may need to be taken to resolve the claim. I think those were the three questions. I don't know if this is missed anything. Traditional leadership. The question really about whether the traditional leaders mutual exclusive communities, that's not essentially the question as to why are we, and at the same time we're saying if they were the owners, why are we talking to them? I think what has happened, Honorable Chair, is that over the years you'll find that in some cases some traditional leaders were deposed during the apartheid days, and there were some that were appointed in the process. So what has happened over a period of time, we tend to find that some people were not traditional, who are historical, not traditional leaders, but today certificated traditional leaders. And when you have to restore land, at the time of disposition, you may find that you have fewer traditional leaders. Today you've got a lot of more traditional leaders. And issues of jurisdiction in terms of those areas that need to be restored play themselves out in such a manner that the restoration becomes a complexity. You also have got instances where some traditional leaders would hold a view that the land should not be restored in the name of a legal entity, but in the name of a specific traditional leader, which then becomes a hindrance in terms of restoration. So those are the sort of dynamics that you get that really causes difficulty. In instances where traditional leaders are part and parcel of the claimant community, the route to follow it has been there to have a discussion with the community, inclusive of the traditional leaders. And those have not really presented a lot of difficulties, except cases where issues of recognition and issues of some of the self-capital that are needed to uplink themselves out. So I think those are more or less the issues. There could be much more detail, but I think in a nutshell, those could be, those are the issues.
Thank you. About I need to respond to one thing, the issue that was raised earlier on by Honorable Abraham around the around the staff that were chosen to work with Quine. Unfortunately, that issue I cannot talk to, it is not in my office. He indicated that there is an investigation that is going on, it is in the Provincial Land Reform Office. With regard to the outstanding claims, why there are so many outstanding claims became this end. I think it is because there were a lot of claims that were not in claims that end. As we know, that about 14,658 claims were lost, and today we only have 1,700 that are outstanding. Of those, mainly are real claims. So that's the reason why we still have got many claims. Mainly because the end was really working that we lost. On the forestry claims, we have 10 claims that were lost against dwarf land, which is state land, and to get to resolved two, and we're in the process of finalizing six, and we still have two that were still outstanding. With more than 51 claims that were lost, and only two have been settled. And we have made offers for five claims as well. And we started 31 claims were lost, and only one claim was has been settled to date, and three offers have been made. The reason for the delay in terms of these claims is because these companies have put conditions to say how these claims should be resolved. Like we say, we first of all will challenge validity and then appoint your lawyers, anthropologists to conduct their own research, which will take 6 months, 8 months, a year in some cases. By the time they come back, they say, we agree that this is a very claim here. However, we dispute the extent of the claim. That we don't think that it was 10,000 hectares, and we think it was 1,000 hectares. So then those things will delay the process. Eventually, when we agree to say it was actually correct to take some 10,000. Then they will come in to say, we accept that it is the same and you are prepared to sell, but we want to have the right to continue using this land. For instance, they will demand a 34-year leases or 34-year leases. So, and chairmen are not very happy because they're asking the question to say what is the value of assets and land that is still going to be used by either more than exactly. So, there was a challenge that was dealing with. But I must say that Moon is very open-minded and amicable to some of the proposals that were made, where we are proposing that chairman should also benefit in terms of the value chain and propose only just basically the forestry growers, the tree growers, but also in terms of the mills, the health shares in the mills and so on. So they are amicable to that. We still start with Mustafi, who at this point in time has not made a clear decision to see how they want us to resolve the case. I want also to talk to the issue of Gongolo, which was raised. It is correct. Gongolo claim has been, negotiations have been going on for 6 years, and it was after 5 years that we started talking serious about the issues of expropriation. And the notice of expropriation was served to them last year, November, December in some instances. And they have made presentations and to say why this should not be appropriated and why the process now, because the reasons that they have awarded are really not assisting us in terms of making the minister change her mind in terms of making a decision. And why the process now of re-evaluating the property so that we can actually finalize the appropriation. So that is the process of coming to the government. And the landowners, the claimants, they are aware of the process, so we constantly inform them of what we need in terms of the process. It is not correct to say that the expropriation notice has been withdrawn. We have not done that, so I still don't like to do that. The other one is the issue of forest claims, to say how are we dealing with them. I think the other problem that we were raising is that we have put forward, for instance, proposal to say we would like the forestry companies to consider claimants as being a partner, because in many instances we have discovered that they have gone out of the claimant communities to look for BE partners, and they have said they are not keen to include claimant communities as BE partners. So we are really pushing for that, and that hopefully we'll be able to agree on that one. And lastly, I want to talk to the issue of landowners offering land if government not buying it. Firstly, in public forums, you hear landowners saying that they make offers to government for government to buy land. And when you actually come to specific properties, say landowners say, can you offer give us properties? One, you don't get that. Two, when, in cases where you do get a list of properties that are up for sale, after you find that they are dictating which properties they want to sell, even if the claim is beyond their property, they are not prepared to actually give you this one or those claims, but we want to get this one. And tenants feel very strong that they want the properties where they are for them. So that's where it comes to this problem. So I think I've tried to cover most of these issues that have been raised around this case.
Just the two last ones. Those that have not been reasons for under expenditure by Honorable Aram Abrahams.
I just want to give all of you.
Reasons for under expenditure. If we remember very well the history of the Commission, part of its legacy, I think it is not general under expenditure. It could be attributed to some specific causes. If you study, you do an age analysis of where this comes from. At a certain point, particularly in time, I think it was in Mpumalanga, when we almost talked for over a year around questions of valuations leading up to the suspension of that commissioner. Around Paris, I think it was around 10. Then stopped there for over a year, so there wasn't really any movement when that investigation was being conducted. So we couldn't really process most of those claims that had to be processed. So that doesn't have been part of the reason. But again, all other commissions, say from Mpumalanga and Limpopo, Mpumalanga was the only commission to have, and Limpopo, to have commissioners appointed at a very, very much late stage. You would remember that initially Commissioner Emma Machine was responsible for four provinces, being Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, and Gauteng. And at some point in time, it was broken into, I think, Dirkie Kilfile was responsible for Mpumalanga and Gauteng. And we didn't even have offices in those provinces. Because it was all operating from Pretoria, which doesn't work out for obvious reasons. And by the time the two commissioners were appointed, the backlog had built up quite substantially. So that also affected, you know, rates of expenditure. But not only the appointment didn't solve the issue. So the appointment of commissioners, plus the appointment of staff and offices and logistics, which took us a few years. So that had a serious impact on expenditure patterns. The models, I think, Honorable Dali is very right. You wouldn't understand the summary of this document. I was just going through it. It's a very comprehensive document, which is narrative, which actually talks to the issues which we could avail at some point for your. Yeah, so it would be very difficult to understand what is being said without the benefit of that background document. President's statement by Honorable Chair. Our understanding of the context of this statement, we know that the President has always been passionate about sustainable rural development. I think he came with the notion of sustainable rural development, your SDPs and all of that. And I think there have been challenges in this area ever since the concept was mooted for the first time. So it's partly because departments didn't give any effect in terms of translating that into integrated programs of delivery to ensure that there is actually urgent attention paid to issues of land reform, because rural development and land reform are quite integrated. So I think that has been a sore point and a big gap in the implementation of government program, and that has caught up with us in the form of rising food prices, because people could produce and deal with the hoarding tendencies of by producers. Because if you look at some of the there's monopolies and oligopolies. If you look at tomatoes, it's just that too. If that man decides not to produce, we're likely to have a crisis. Or you know,
I think Commissioner, I think you made your point that the minister has the same.
Yeah, but to effect the president's question.
Okay.
Now the last one would be on valuations. On valuations, I think we're talking to an existing valuation, just that we can't mention the name of the valuer. It was at the port of Limpopo, where the valuer himself says he couldn't find any evidence of recent sales in the northern part of Limpopo, I think around Messina, in his report. But he continues to say land prices are generally increasing, and we are saying valuation doesn't work on the basis of general increase in land prices, because there's got to be evidence-based. The evidence base is that there hadn't been any recent sales over a year in that area. So it's based on a valuation report, and of course other things that we had problems with. Thank you.
I'm sure there are
a
number of problems with questions by members of
want to give them that opportunity. We have 7 minutes left now before 1 o'clock. We took the decision to hold our meeting at 9 in the morning so that hopefully by 12 we should be finished. But because we tend to be long-winded and figures this were sometimes in a rally or in the chamber, and then we tend to repeat ourselves because they have not written down some of the points that one has. As a result, we waste a lot of time. And in turn, the presenters need to find themselves having to try to address all of these things, even matters that are not really germane to the issue at hand. So my appeal as the chairman, I think, for this week and next week, is that let us try and be concise and precise when we raise issues, especially in committee, so that we save on time while at the same time not losing the essence of what we're saying. Mr. Porter, I understand you have a follow-up. Mr. Shali, Mr. Nell, Mr. Singh, Mr. Shepherd.
Honourable Chair, I'll be very, very quick. I'm very happy to hear from the Acting Commissioner Vella that they take the portfolio committee very seriously. However, some very, very serious allegations were made yesterday, particularly by the Honourable Abram, about lack of communication or lack of respect for communication. Can you please have, in writing, a response to this committee on the very issues you raised that are very specific? So I'd like a commitment that there will be a response in writing. Secondly, the commitment to oversight resolutions of this committee. For instance, the Acting Commissioner is apparently under the impression that the negative impression is due to sensational and negative media reporting. If that is indeed the case, let us hear about it. This committee would love to visit very successful projects. However, projects we have visited at the instance of the department, and I've been on those visits myself, the acting chair was on those visits myself, where the departments themselves were asked to, not one single one, for instance, the fee state, could they show us one that was working. They were under the impression they were working, they were not working. So please, in writing, give us a list throughout the country of successful projects so we can then visit them and assist in changing this apparent distortion by the media. Then, lastly, the 500 cases where the people tend to inflate the prices. Let us have a list of those cases. Let us have a list of the, I think, 53 where the intention to expropriate is. Our job as members of parliament is to represent, not only serve on this committee, but also represent the voters of this country. It is our responsibility to know about such cases. It is our responsibility to try and assist this commission in resolving those cases without a bad negative impression developing on the issue. And then can we please invite me to go down to have all the reports from progress on these various issues. But invite me to this committee, please.
There are two areas which I think someone has to report now to give us a reporting, but I think in Bombera, I know it's a community trust. It didn't respond on that particular one. And also, this 10 Bosch or 10 Bosch. Which I think is between your nerve space and in that particular area. There's a problem that's claimed. I want you to give us a full detailed report in writing. The last issue, you know, the commissioner from KZN, she's saying that they are pushing community claimants on forest to the broad base of community farming.
They're pushing somebody.
No. You see, the claimants are owners in terms of claims. Then, therefore, when you look at the broad base we're calling plowmen, you will see at the end of the day that when you come in terms of that particular code, of a code itself, the company cannot be blamed as compounded because they don't fall within that code. The people who are falling within that code are the blacks who are coming in. You know? It is in that context when I'm saying, if that is correct, it is wrong. what I'm saying, they are pushing the company to accept the community, I mean the owner, the new land owner, to be part of the enterprise that is operating on their land. But these companies are refusing. Instead, they take people from outside to fulfill the PEA code requirements.
That's why I'm saying that if that case is wrong, not if that case is wrong, because the claim that the owner, they can't then say, no, companies don't take those that outside take the owner. No, it must be the owner who are taking the ownership. What is vice versa?
Thank you very much. Very short, Chairperson. Two things for us as a committee to consider, I think. One is the land claims court. It's a special purpose vehicle, as you indicated correctly, Chair. I mean, the long delays, we've had 7-8 years, and maybe at some time we need to invite somebody from there to tell us why there are these delays in the court, which is supposed to, to sort these problems out as quickly as possible and not to just leave it to the commission. Why is it taking them so long? What are their particular challenges? So I think we need to invite them sometime or the other as a committee, but it's something that we need to consider. The second thing we need to consider as a committee, we have oversight over land affairs, over agriculture, and all these departments related to agriculture. How can we as a committee assist in ensuring that there's coordination between the commission and all these departments so that the people of South Africa can benefit from the end product? And I think we have a responsibility in that regard to ensure that we promote coordination. My question, and it could be in writing, are there still unprocessed claims which are still to be gazetted? And if so, how many of such claims are there? And by when will that process of gazetting claims which were lodged by 31 December 1998 be completed? Thank you.
But I just want to make a comment about this matter of testimony. Because my silence might be construed. I think that a suggestion and advice has always been given by this committee that this matter of traditionalism being reported as a delayed finalization of the restitution claim should be taken to the political organization that represents the continent officially in the first. In my understanding, we have not been approached by the commission, in spite of the decisions that are taken here, but you need to consult consultants. Because I understand the commission is going to take years before it deals with this matter, the other commission, the local commission. So if they were going to wait for the Tapo Commission to finish its work, then it means we'll never finish restitution. And yet restitution is a time-bound type of a problem. So because my understanding is that there are no communities that would have been dispossessed of their land without having traditional interests of their own. And when a community is removed, that community is placed in another part of the land, sometimes of the same traditional authority. So that now the traditional authority naturally has an interest when that land is withdrawn, because they would want to ask the question that was asking me then. But what about the people who had to give away portions of their own land in order to accommodate the people who were removed? Because people tend to think only for themselves if they don't have the guidance. But in any event, I think it's 1 o'clock already now. I'm not sure if you will insist, the committee will insist on getting responses to their follow up questions now. But a number of you have said, let us get answers and responses to these questions in writing. I think that's the rules will take. Well, I'm told that there's a single hand outside. I don't know if everybody has a problem for next week. I don't, but I've requested Matthew here to tell me what the problem is like. Because the second thing again said, I must please hear the speech.
next week because we'll be going overseas. We need to speak of Parliament. On Tuesday, we'll be dealing with the ARC and OPC strategic plan. Then on Wednesday, the PP, ECD, Naka Farm, Ngonyama, Trust. And then on Friday, there'll be a briefing by DLA on the land use management bill. However, the bill has not yet been certified by the state law advisor, so it has not yet been tabled in Parliament. Well, there are those technicalities. I thought I should send to time you about the date of our program for next week. Friday, there's a briefing. Don't miss that. There will be people. Next week.
On the
bill. On the bill. Then you'll find it. I take it you're already here.
Yeah.
On Friday. Oh, sure.
Hey,
well, that's about it. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. I
think the land is there.
Do we have a problem?
Okay. Yeah, okay.